I have to call a meeting to order. Do we have a roll?
Okay, Maria DeAnda, Darren Garrett.
Here.
Ron Martin.
Here.
Jim DeMartini.
Here.
Jeff Grover.
Here.
Gordon
Ford.
Here. Mike Lynch.
Here.
Linda Stoss Burnett.
Here.
Clarence Willman.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Do we have any announcements, John?
I do have a couple. You know, we're in the process of elections to, actually three, retirement board members are up for election. Terms end June 30th, and we have Joan Clendenin filed for the alternate retiree seat. She was the only person filing, so she is elected as the alternate retiree rep to begin as July 1st, 2011. The retiree representative election will now be between Steve Yock and Michael O'Neill, with ballots due June 23rd, 2011. And tomorrow is the final filing date for seat number three, general member.
Are there any candidates for that, or no one?
The final filing date will be tomorrow, so we don't know who the final candidates will be.
Any other announcements?
I have one.
Okay.
I distributed the brochure for the Sackers UC Berkeley Hawes School of Business Retirement Systems Pension Program. And if anybody's interested in going, please let me know. If you're not, leave your brochures here. It's in July 11th through the 13th at Berkeley.
Right, this is the time on the agenda for public comment. Is there anyone from the public here who would like to speak on an item that is not on the agenda? Maybe we can move on. Consent calendar.
I make a motion to accept the consent calendar.
Excuse me.
There's an item on here that is deferred, and I'm included on that, so I think I'd like to have that heard separately.
What's deferred retirement?
Deferred retirements.
5F.
So can we modify the motion to everything but 5F, and I can vote on it, and I'll step back on the 5F?
Yes.
I'll second her motion then, if it excludes 5F.
Okay. The consent calendar, with the exception of 5F, is there a motion in favor?
I make a motion.
Okay, is there any opposition? Motion carries.
Yes.
Let's now do 5F.
Motion to approve.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay.
And just so the record reflects that he recused himself.
Abstain.
Item 6.
Well, we have a long list today. Recognizing that, we'll try to get through it as quick as possible, but 6A has to do with the RBC Infrastructure Fund of Fund potential investment, and you should have as part of your packet the side letter and the work done by Hampson Bridget on various topics, and I believe that Scott is available by phone to go over that. But my understanding, especially...
Scott, hi, thanks, Scott. With Stan Sarah, I'm going to put you on the speakerphone, okay? Okay, you're on.
Hi, Scott Smith here at Hanson Bridget.
Hey, Scott, it's Paul Hart from Strategic Investment Solutions.
Paul from...
Strategic Investment Solutions.
Okay, great.
I was just going to say that my understanding is that this was a lot cleaner than the previous KKR that you reviewed, and open up the side letter and the preferred terms matrix that you prepared to the board for any questions.
And I would echo those thoughts there, Paul, and definitely agree that this was a lot more straightforward. A lot more favorable in terms of structure from a fee perspective, we still have the side letter that I'm not sure, and maybe Tom can report as to whether the other side has received it, and I haven't communicated with the other side yet, so there's some things to work out, but generally, just out of the gate, this vehicle is met with a much more favorable impression from my standpoint.
Yeah, Scott, we've only shared this with the retirement board at this point, waiting for their direction, so it has not been shared with the other side.
Okay.
So, Tom, what are you asking us to do now?
To review with Scott Smith these issues, if you want to move forward with this particular investment.
And Scott, is there? Can you summarize kind of the outstanding issues on that you have on the side letter, and you know how major or minor they may be?
Sure. You know, the side letter, even though I say this one is much more clean cut, if you look through it, you'll see it's probably 10 pages, and there's probably, there is in fact 30 different paragraphs.
Right.
Many of these paragraphs are the same items and same types of requests that I would make for any other retirement system that I work with, and that I do make for the other retirement systems I work with. And by and large, the vast majority are geared towards just ensuring you have more information about your investment on an ongoing basis, and that the fund is operated fairly, and there's no favoritism towards other parties or related parties, and there's disclosure of you know, transactions involving those parties. You know, it begins with the same provision that I almost insist on for every client that I represent right out of the gate, which is a most favored nation provision, meaning that if somebody else is investing in this fund and gets more favorable terms, then you would get the same. And you know, we can expect that there may be some negotiation around how that works, whether it's limited to somebody else who invests the same amount or less than you, and whether there's carve-outs for rights that are particular to an investor that aren't applicable to you. But I wouldn't expect a great deal of resistance. I would say that in you know, my experience in the 200 or more of these that I've done, I've seen maybe less than three or four funds that have objected to an MFN provision altogether instead of negotiating it somewhere. But most of what follows, if you read through this, is really ensuring you get all of the information that I would think you would want, and at least have access to that information on a going forward basis to monitor this investment and ensure that things are being done in the way that they should be done. Some of the provisions are unique to you as a retirement system in terms of your Public Records Act and Open Meetings Act requirements, and making sure that the agreements don't put on you any more harsh restrictions or more stringent restrictions than what you can comply with under the law to which you're subject. As Tom has said, the fund hasn't seen any of this yet, and there could be some pushback. I don't know their negotiation position. I don't know, whether they've seen other provisions like this. Chances are, if they're talking to other California retirement systems similar to you, they will have. I certainly try to be very thorough in my job, and I know there's other attorneys out there representing other systems, and I've seen their side letters, and they look often quite similar to mine. But we still need to go through that process of them receiving and reviewing these requests and coming to some middle ground, which, at this point I don't have any reason to think that we can't. I'm not going into their fund documents and arguing for wholesale changes to any particular provision or saying that something altogether needs to come out. From that standpoint, the documents were fairly clean, even-handed, and reasonable and fair. So,
Paul?
Good.
Members, do you have any comments?
I do have actually one question on page 4. There at the bottom, number 12, where they have the, where it's in yellow and it's pending confirmation of inclusion from Stan Sarah. So is that something that we need to decide on, that if we want that included or not in this side letter?
Well, that should be, I think that is something that indication from RBC is that our fund would get a representation on the advisory committee. And I see Jim Roberts from RBC here, and he should be able to confirm that also.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And so am I to understand then that Stancera would like to move forward proposing that it does receive a seat on the advisory committee?
If there's an agreement to go forward with that, with
okay.
the investment, which is to be determined, that is correct, Scott, yes.
Okay.
Who's going to be on that?
Well, and that's it's up to the board if you want to be represented and who to represent at this point in time, or if there's any changes to the side letter that you want to make, or if you want to approve the side letter as is. That's where we're going to move forward with this.
Well, I would make a recommendation that we approve the side letter with the inclusion of the advisory committee.
Is there a second to the recommendation?
I'll second that.
Is there any discussion? Paul, do you recommend that also?
Yes, that's correct.
Tom, do you recommend it?
Yeah.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
So then you can either decide now if you're going to appoint someone from this board to that committee, or you can decide that later.
Right. What's the preference of the board? Do you want to do an appointment now or wait till we see if we go further?
I think we should do is come up with a dollar commitment level and have that pending the satisfactory negotiations of a side letter with representation on the advisory committee, and on the dollar amount also what my understanding would be a management fee from RBC of 50 basis points if the commitment is $30 million or above. So negotiations satisfactory of the side letter, advisory committee representation, which will be part of the side letter, and if our commitment is $30 million or above, a management fee flat of 50 basis points.
Well, what is the advisory committee position? How engaged can that person be?
Well, it's an important part that it's someone from the fund or our firm, and doesn't have to be the same person every time, but I think once a year the advisory committee would meet, or maybe twice a year, and it would be reviewing all the business of the fund, and any new potential issues would have to be run through the advisory committee. So having representation on that is a way to protect our investment.
Is the advisory committee an after the fact committee, or does it?
No, I would call it after the fact. It's oftentimes it's just reviewing practices, making sure the fund is following procedures and investments the way it's been laid out to their LPs, and then having a hand in making important fund decisions going forward also.
And the level of our representative, what you're saying, would be like yourself, or would it be a board member?
Exactly. That's what I would envision. And it's just one seat on the advisory committee, but
how many seats are on there?
I don't know that we've set a number of seats, but
have you guys met before? Have you had the meeting yet?
No. But we do welcome the your involvement in that, and we expect to take very seriously the input from the folks on that committee, and we want them to know what's going on with the portfolio and what we're working on, and in fact, get their support that how we're doing it, and the direction we're taking the fund is consistent with your desires. So,
okay.
it's an important function, and it's taken very seriously by us.
And I think clearly having representation versus not having representation is a positive.
Well, based on where we started with all this many years ago, we talked about alternative investments being roughly 3%, and we've looked at three now. We've invested in one Invesco, and so I'd make a motion that we move forward with this at 3% level, which would be roughly $40 million.
So you move to move forward at 3%?
Correct.
$40 million.
$40 million.
A commitment of $40 million.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Discussion.
So that's $40 million into this infrastructure, plus whatever we have in Invesco. I want to be sure I understand.
No, that's
it. We talked about looking at as many as four different.
9% of the total.
Or three different.
Three and three. 9% of the total fund. Right now, the Special Situation Fund has Invesco at 1.5% or half of their position. As we continue to monitor that, and this is would be a full 3% in infrastructure into one fund, or $40 million capital commitment to be drawn down as capital is called.
So the let me ask a question: if we do this, when does the advisory committee become a reality?
And well, the fund has, will...
We have to wait for them to respond to the letter?
Well, we have to wait for the fund to get up and running, too, which is, we envision, in talking to RBC, we need to communicate with them, at or around July 1st, would be an expected launch date. And I suspect after the fund is launched that an advisory committee, in conjunction with that launching of the fund, will be formed, and we'll get notice when the first meeting is.
Okay, it's been a motion made and seconded. Call for the question.
Can you restate the motion?
Approve 3% up to $40 million.
A capital commitment.
In investment. With subject to their agreement to the letter we send them and whatever the response back is. Is that correct?
Correct.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Should we set Paul for the, I guess we wait until we get their response before we appoint someone?
We would just ask that staff and working with Scott and his firm send the side letter to RBC for their review, and then to begin the negotiations to have that finalized.
Do that.
And just for my comfort level, Paul, I'm really interested in the advisory committee and as of naming somebody for it sooner rather than later once they get this done. I don't want this to drag.
Sure. I think Jim hears that.
I understand. I would like, if it's appropriate, I can tell you that when the side letter was posted to the website, we did pull that down, and we've already read through the side letter, and we look forward to a productive conversation. We don't really see any significant issues in what your attorney has raised. So we do need to go through the process of addressing the issues, but there doesn't seem to be anything significant that would give us concerns. So, and as appropriate, we thank you. We look forward to working on behalf of your fund.
So this will move relatively quickly then?
Yeah, on our part, it's certainly. Yeah, yes.
Do you guys want to set it? Well, I guess we don't need to do the appointment now. Schedule that later. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Next item.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And Tom, I'll be in touch. Maybe we should touch base tomorrow just to connect.
We'll do.
Okay. Nothing else for me at this point?
Yes. One board member has a question. Your advisory committee. Where do you intend to have it meet?
Boston, I believe.
Probably the first one in Boston.
Increased the number of interested parties.
I'm sure the initial meeting will be in Boston, and then part of it will depend on, I imagine, on the geographic makeup of the committee.
Okay, just as one board member here myself, I'm really looking at that advisory committee to have someone from this board on there.
Yes.
Yeah, and I don't mean myself, but I want a representative.
No, and Mr. Hart, in his conversations with us, thought that was important, and we essentially agreed to that. I look forward to that. So.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Okay, thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye.
Okay, Paul, what else?
Okay, going on to item B, which is the discussion and action on research affiliates long short strategy potential investment. In your packet should be a review that we did on long short, kind of follow up on the last meeting. As you recall, we've had research affiliates in twice, once on a general education discussion of long short investing and what that is, and then secondly, more recently, presentation on their particular fund, the Research Affiliates Fundamental Index Long Short Fund, and we were had a discussion on fees, for example, last time, and we kind of put in advantages and disadvantages on this one sheet on long-short investing. And then below is characteristics of the Research Affiliates Long-Short Fund. I think it does fit in the Special Situations Fund. It's a way to allow the manager to increase their opportunity set to not only be long stocks but also short, and target a absolute return over full market cycles of about 7-8% would be a reasonable expectation here, and also not be correlated to the long only equity managers and index funds that we currently have. So this would be a new type of strategy for Stan Serra. It's, I think, appropriate for special situations, and also I like this fund because although the fees have potentially higher than what long-only investing is, it's quite reasonable compared to other long-short investments. And also Research Affiliates uses a quantitative set of rules to produce the long and short parts of their portfolios. We have, I think you've seen this from the previous meeting with Research Affiliates, and I do have a longer term investment in this fund with San Joaquin County that has a 3-year live performance record with Research Affiliates and has produced 8%, actually 5 years, over 3 and 5 years, an 8% return through a horrific market and a very good market. It has trailed recently, obviously, to long indexes since the rally in March 2009, although it has created a positive return. And it has been at a disadvantage these last 3 years with growth trouncing value on a style basis, which we'll show you when we get to the quarterly and monthly reports. But I think that can't continue, and they tend to emphasize value on the long side and be short more higher beta type of growthy type of names. So I think it's a good time to get in. Again, this would be a earmark of 3% or $40 million. although our recommendation would be an initial investment of half of that, like we did Invesco at $20 million. So I will take any questions on long-short strategy in general, research affiliates in particular, but our recommendation as consultant would be a investment of 1.5% roughly, or $20 million initially in the special situations fund with the long short strategy in their RAFI global long short fund.
Questions?
This is the same thing as a hedge fund?
It could be, yes, it would be considered under a hedge fund. There is the use of a prime broker like a hedge fund to short stocks. Although it's you know, as was explained, the RAFI is a fundamental index, which is like a, similar to a passive index fund, although it has the ability and will go short a equal weight of stocks on the short side as the long side.
Paul, if you've watched them for the last 5 years, they've returned an average 8%.
Yes.
And
net, yeah.
Yeah, over that. I understand it moving slowly, but we're talking about less than 3% of our portfolio. If we're trying to hedge, if this market has peaked out, which
right.
Believe many people think it has, and at least protect us from some downside risk.
It's
1.5% is nothing. 3% is pretty small. That's my only.
Right. The only argument I would have we could dollar cost in over a short period of time and get the board comfortable with a half position initially and see how they act, you know, live with Stancero money. But if the board has the comfort level, there's no reason not to do the full 3% or $40 million. I was just proposing half of that, just kind of knowing some of the board and just giving them a chance to get comfortable with the smaller dollar amount. That's all.
Well, Jim, if you remember the presentation from several months ago, they talked about, they did the analytics on the stock, and then they shorted those stocks that were overvalued, or they thought had big runs, Netflix, Apple,
Google.
Amazon, Google, those types of stocks. And then they bought stocks that they thought were undervalued. So there is a blend and I think, a pretty good philosophy in doing that, instead of just arbitrary shorting companies and then doing everything in your power to drive them down. I think when you do an analytical approach to it, it seems to me to be a little bit softer, gentler type of a strategy as opposed to what we see in hedge funds.
I think it's improper investment retirement fund. I'm going to oppose it.
Jim and I probably have a pretty similar philosophy on risk, but my problem comes is if we go into a marketplace where the equities are low, and we're still up against an 8% requirement for actuarials to come out. I don't know how else we make up to the 8% if we don't have some risk in there.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger risk is to the plan sponsor. If we don't have something that offsets the low fixed, the plan sponsor just starts writing checks.
And I would recommend doing this type of strategy when we think the market is at a higher level, and the chance of Dow being 10 versus 16, let's say, there's more chance of 10 than 10. And this is the time to be in a short strategy, even though it's a small portion of what you do. Now, if the market does pull back, we may want to pull back our position or our investment in this one, because then they don't perform well in an up market if you're shorting stocks up.
Well, the beauty of this is they should do 8% hurdle regardless of the market over the long term, which will get your actuary assumed rate regardless if the market's going up or down. and you still have the bulk of your assets and long equity for that shortfall and, you know, the longer term. This is more an absolute return fixed income substitute, frankly, than a replacement for equities.
Which is that? 1.5%.
Right.
So we have a motion to approve this at 1.5%. We have.
That's a recommendation. And mine wasn't a motion. I was just saying.
Okay.
I wanted to throw that out.
An alternative.
Yes.
And I think I agree with Ron. I don't see any reason why not to just do the 3% right off the bat.
Is that a motion, Clarence?
I can make it a motion. So I'll make a motion that we put in the 3% or $40 million into this into the their RAFI long short fund.
I'll second that.
Comment, Mike. I'll vote against that, but I would vote in favor of a 1.5% just to get our feet wet.
Any further discussion from board members?
Same thing. We will object. I will object. Yeah.
So I think it's an improper investment. We shouldn't consider it.
All right. So on the 3%, the motion is for 3% into RAFI. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Call the roll. Call the roll, Kelly, please, on this.
Jim DeMartini?
No.
Gordon Ford or Judy?
No.
Jeff Grover?
No.
Mike Lynch?
No.
Linda Stotts Burnett?
Yes.
Clarence Willman?
Yes.
And Ron Martin?
Yes.
Darren. Oh, I'm sorry, Darren Garrett.
No.
Motion fails.
Okay, motion fails 3-5.
I'll make a similar motion, but at the initial 1.5%.
Is there a second to that?
I'll second that.
Okay, it's moved and seconded to invest in RAFI at 1.5%. Is there discussion? Before we vote, I would just. My position would. I'm just not comfortable enough to take that step, so I would be voting no on this. So please, all those in favor?
I'll just, based upon what our consultant said, I'd like to add to what time frame would you like to look at as far as bringing it back to look at the performance?
This is 6 months.
That's what I thought. So I'll add in my motion for a review in 6 months with respect to the performance of this investment.
We'll accept the amendment. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Call the roll.
Okay, first I would like to make sure, clear up the motion. Motion was made by Darren Garrett and seconded by Linda Stotts Burnett for the 1.5% capital promise to research affiliates. Is that the motion? Okay.
With the report, that performance report due.
Thank you. 6 months report review. Okay. Let's see. Jim DeMartini?
No.
Gordon Ford or Gene?
No.
Mike Lynch?
No.
Jeff Grover?
Yes.
Darren Garrett?
Yes.
Ron Martin?
Yes.
Clarence Willman?
Yes.
Linda Stotts Burnett?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries 5-3. Next item.
Thank you. Next item is the PIMCO Amendment to Investment Guidelines. We initially brought this to the board last month, and there was some confusion with the glossary with some terms in there that were not part of our investable universe. So we went back after that meeting, Tom and his staff, to PIMCO to revise the amended guidelines to strike a lot of the language out of the glossary that caused the confusion. PIMCO has come back to us with those revisions. I have had a chance to review them. There's a red line version and a final version, and I am satisfied with the changes made by PIMCO. Our recommendation would be to accept these the final version of revised guidelines by PIMCO to modify their assignment ever so slightly by the initial purchase of corporate bonds that are rated below investment grade, which had previously been approved by the board. So these guidelines are just a change to reflect the previous approval and changing or modifying their mandate ever so slightly and cleaning up the glossary.
Mr. Chairman, remind everybody these are junk bonds. And it's always been a prohibited investment. As bad as the last one was we voted for, this is even worse. This is not something the retirement system should be investing in.
Paul, you mentioned that this was to maintain the bonds at a certain level. These amendments.
Our investment managers can hold up to 10% of their portfolio in bonds that are rated below investment grade via downgrades after they initially purchase above investment grade bonds. This action does not change our guidelines at all in that regard. It just allows PIMCO to initially buy bonds that are below investment grade up to 10% of the portfolio. And my understanding is that change had already been approved by the board.
That's correct.
And this is just a reflection of that change to the investment agreement with PIMCO, not our guidelines. Our guidelines do not have to be changed based on that.
So you recommend this?
Yeah, we've already approved it.
Approved. I recommend that the changes made by PIMCO to their investment guidelines and glossary for the Stancera account be accepted based on the revisions they made from the last time to clear up the confusion from the glossary. The issue of below investment grade bonds had already been approved by the board.
And we still have a minimum issue quality of B-, right? They can't buy
triple C below investment grade. It's the highest level of below investment grade. And as you recall, it's more in semantics on what PIMCO views the bond's true quality is versus the rating agencies.
Well, I'll make the motion that we accept the new wording on this document.
I'll second that.
Is there discussion, Jim?
Yeah, well, we've been posted in the wrong direction. I mean, it changed the language so we can do it, but I just think it's the wrong direction to go, and they'll be back someday from going to 10% to 20% to 30%. And I don't know where it'll all end, but, we've had bad investments in the past, and this is another one.
I'm not sure. I agree with some of your sentiments, but I'm not sure this is the vehicle to express them. Do we have a Tom or Paul? Are we going to revisit this issue of junk bonds or below investment grade bonds in the near future, or should we revisit it at the board's sentiment?
Well, anytime. I mean, we get reviews from PIMCO all the monthly. We get information on how they're doing, and quarterly we get reviews from them. So I mean, we can review it.
I think that's
anytime we want.
I think. Absolutely. I think when we get our reviews and PIMCO is actually physically here or on the phone, that's the time to ask to see how that portion of the portfolio is performing. if it becomes a drag on the portfolio, then maybe that's the appropriate time to say, you know, we want to relook at this.
How's it been doing so far, Paul?
Well, it hasn't been in effect yet, okay. So.
Okay. All right. Is there a motion and a second?
Yeah, right here.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Who's opposed?
No.
Call the roll.
Okay. All right, here. Darren Garrett?
Yes.
Ron Martin?
Yes.
Jim DeMartini?
No.
Jeff Grover?
No.
Jegan?
Yes.
Linda Stotts Burnett?
Yes.
Clarence Woolman?
Yes.
Do I get a vote?
Oh, yeah. Mike Lynch? Motion carries.
Okay.
Another 5-3.
5-3 vote, motion carries. Next item, Paul.
Item D is the discussion action on rebalancing the target asset level. We prepared a spreadsheet, a single page, and I'd like to go over that. You can see our balances at the end of April to targets. The new asset allocation on the right would be the targets, including the full 3% to the three type of investments in the Special Situations Fund. Action in the markets in May have slightly corrected it for us. That being, equities have started to decline a bit in May, and fixed income was strong in April and has been fairly strong in May as yields have stabilized or come down a bit. So part of that, we prefer to rebalance ahead of the market, taking care of ourselves. But that said, I'm going to go over four steps here. One is the Invesco Global REIT, which is currently at $20 million, which is half a position, 1.5 of the total 3% of Global REITs in the Special Situations Fund. You can see a full 3% position is $43 million, or for our sake, we round it to $40 million. An additional $20 million into Invesco would get us to the $40 million. However, I just saw Invesco this week, and they stated that the fund today is at a 20% premium to the net asset value of the underlying issue. So they still believe it's not an appropriate time to rebalance or increase our allocation to that $20 million roughly. We will continue to watch that, but for now, we would think it's best for the fund not to put any more money into the REIT portfolio. Moving to the infrastructure, we just recently approved a $40 million investment in the RBC Infrastructure Fund of Funds, pending, obviously, the three major steps we asked for, the side letter representation on the committee level, advisory committee, and a fee of 50 basis points for the $40 million from RBC. That will be called, if everything is satisfactorily negotiated, by capital calls in the future. We lay out $30 million being called for the $40 million. It will take time to get the full $40 million. It's generally a 2 or 3 year investment period. But as capital is called, we would use these three funds initially as a source for 30 to 40 million, and we'll come back to you for the additional 10 over time, but we have plenty of time for that. The long short equity of 20 million approved to go to Research Affiliates Global Long Short Fund. We propose coming 10 million from Pyramus, 10 million from LSV. Again, that's pending approval of a satisfactory contract with Research Affiliates. And we can shoot for kind of like a maybe July 1st start date, right at the first day of a new quarter is always a good start date. So if we can get our contracts approved by then, if not, subsequent to that. And then there's an intermediate rebalancing to fixed income that we are proposing from six equity funds, U.S. equity, where a total of $50 million would be redistributed from U.S. equity to fixed income. That $50 million equates to roughly 3.5% of total assets. We're well below 3.5% in fixed income to our target. This will move us kind of halfway from being below the low end of target to our target level, so kind of halfway in between. I don't think it's necessary to go all the way back to target, and as I said, the market's also done some of that for us this month. So it would take $10 million from Dodge and Cox Equity, $10 million from the two small cap managers. Small caps had a huge run these last 18 months, even relative to large cap. So this would take money away from Cap Prospects and Legato. And then two index funds, BlackRock and BNY Mellon. And lastly, the two international equity funds, $5 million from Pyramus and LSV, in addition to the $10 million each from Long Short. So it would be a total of $15 million to them. And you can see international equity to the far right is roughly Pyramus $17 million and LSV $20 million under their new asset allocation. So we would say that the source from Long Short would be Pyramus and LSV, $10 million each to fund RF Raffi, pending contract approval. Infrastructure Fund, I'm stumbling, $40 million versus capital calls. In the future, the first $30 million, $15 million from Dodge and Cox Equity, $10 million Delaware Large Cap Growth, $5 million Capital Prospects, and an intermediate rebalancing of fixed income in the short term, taking $50 million as indicated to go to Dodge and Cox fixed income. And that will get us more in line with our targets. And
hey, Paul, when you make these recommendations of taking on rebalancing and taking money from one manager and put it in a different asset class, do you factor in performance within the class with those recommendations?
I'm aware of it, but it's really just more black and white, who's the most under and who's the most over, and doing it that way. There's another factor of using index funds, all else being equal, because there's a lower cost to transact with them. None of our managers are really, you know, believe it or not, none of them are really doing really poorly now. They're, for the most part, doing above average.
I have a question, Mike.
Yes, sure.
First time around for me.
Sure, so sure. No.
Do we have a policy on rebalancing? Can we do automatically rebalance at a certain point?
We have ranges for the asset classes, which are on the monthlies, kind of targets in the low end and the top end, and for the individual managers within the asset classes, they each have the same bands around their targets. And when an asset class goes above or below their bands, it's either pierced on the downside or on the upside, that becomes a big red flag that, you know, we're on notice that this is happening. And then there's a little judgment on our part whether to let that go on for a little while. We've let this go on for a few months with fixed income below target, and it's really worked to our advantage because equities have continued to rally. When it pierces below target, so it's not automatically that you rebalance back to target, but it's a red flag, and then we kind of use judgment. But when it gets further and further below the bands, you get more and more uncomfortable, and that's kind of the point I was at the end.
So our rebalance is subjective, not objective. It's not every 6 months or
No.
And then who sets the targets? We're looking at 30,
well, the asset class. The asset class targets are policy of the board, okay, based on the asset allocation, okay. And the individual managers are from the manager structure work we do within the asset class, how much each manager gets.
Okay, so we periodically rebalance based on the activity. But then when we do rebalance, it's to these set percentages.
It's like I said, we're not
range. Okay.
It's back within the range.
Yeah.
Not necessarily all the way back to target.
Okay, so So
there is a.
So we don't have it written down 38%, but that 38% is in the range.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Any other questions?
Yes.
So is there a motion on this? Can we have a motion?
I make a motion that we take Paul's recommendation to rebalance.
Is there a second?
Just for clarification, you're talking about the new asset allocation.
Yes.
What we're approving.
Yeah. I'll second it.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
I did not get the second on that. Thank you.
Item F.
Item E is the quarterly performance. I'm going to go fairly quickly through this because I'm getting tired of myself talking. I'm sure you are. We're going to do the quarterly, and then we'll follow that up with the monthly, with the manager review and then the monthly. Page one, capital market review for the first quarter, any calendar year 2011, and the third quarter for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2011. Despite continued unrest in the Middle East and North Africa, devastating earthquake in Japan, we saw their equity markets fall 20% immediately thereafter, and ongoing fiscal imbalances in Europe, which are becoming more and more prevalent these days, equity markets rallied strongly. And the equity market rally continued from the low in March 9, 2007, and also the end of August 2010, when, March 9, 2009, that should be, and the end of August 2010, when the Fed indicating QE2 was coming. Central banks outside the U.S. have all turned to a tightening cycle to fight inflation and strong growth in the emerging markets. And the United States is probably the lone central bank left in the world that continues to have easing and liquidity pumping into the market conditions. QE2 is ending in June. QE2 presently buys over 90% of the U.S. Treasuries issued on a monthly basis. So it'll be interesting to see if the ending of QE2 will diminish some of the excesses, which is flowing into the commodities and the high beta stocks in the market. And I think we're starting to see that in May, the realization that QE2 is ending and the easy conditions that have been with us since the financial crisis start might be transitioning to something else. Page 2 and 3 lists what helped and what hurt for the fund during the first quarter of 2011. The fund returned a very good 4.2%, ranked 45th percentile, and beat its policy index of, by 60 basis points, a policy index of 3.6%. What helped, there was 5 active managers, Delaware and PIMCO added a little value, and Dodge & Cox Fixed Income, LSV, and Capital Prospects all added strong alpha for the quarter. And what hindered us was 4 of the active managers, but they didn't hinder us that much. Dodge & Cox Equity, Legato, and Pyramus trailed 40 basis points, and Invesco by 80 basis points. Page 4, the market value of the fund at the end of March 31st was $1.4 billion, and page 5 shows each of the managers' allocations. And on the U.S. equity, I like our mix of active passive now. We have a U.S. large cap, a Russell 1000 growth, Russell 1000 value, and core S&P 500 passive allocation. Pages 6 and 7 is the performance summary for the fund. You can see fiscal year-to-date, the first 9 months, 21.7 versus 20.2, 150 basis points. 2 years during this strong rally in equities, the funds produced 27.9 on an annualized basis versus 25.9, 200 basis points of alpha and a ranking of 7th percentile. And our 3-year numbers, 130 basis points and 5-year 10. Individual managers, you can see Dodge and Cox fiscal year to date on the equity has added 130 basis points and 2 years 260, although their 5-year is flat. And then the total U.S. equity composite fiscal year to date has been strong, 33.4 versus 32.4. Our two international equity managers, LSV and Peerness, have also performed well during this 2-year period. 42.1 for LSV, 36.4 for Pyramus, against a 35.5 for the benchmark. We've added 380 basis points combined over that 2-year period. Fiscal year to date, 110 basis points. The two complementary active managers, international, seems to be working just fine. And fixed income, there's been a huge snapback by Dodge and Cox since the rally in equities, and credit spreads have been narrowing, and you can see that in the numbers up to 3 years, with 3 years up 300 basis points and 5 years up 140. For the quarter, Dodge and Cox added 90 basis points and PIMCO 20, and fiscal year to date, the 9 months, Dodge and Cox has added 250 and PIMCO 70. For Invesco and the global REIT manager, has had a strong return of 28.1% for fiscal year to date, but they have not kept up with their benchmark, up 29.6, since the 3-year number is relatively flat against the benchmark. And they're just about back to $20 million in the end of April. Page 8, longer term, the plan is over 10 years, 7.1% ranking in 9th percentile versus the investment policy index of 5.7. That's 140 basis points compounded annually for 10 years. That's a lot. That's a good performance. And then on page 9 shows the quarterly plan attribution of a report card. You see the bottom 0.36 under the allocation heading and value added towards the right. That comes from our overweight in equities and underweight in fixed income versus policy. That's what we've let go a little bit, and that's added significant value as equities continue to rally in the first quarter. Selection was 22 basis points, and the total was about 6/10 of a percent. But that we've let that go far enough, and that's why we just propose rebalancing. Page 10, sector returns. P/E ratio of the market at 17.8 on a trailing basis is not cheap and not expensive. It's kind of in between, especially where interest rates are. And you can see that everything was positive for the quarter and the year as far as sector returns. For the 1 year, consumer staples and healthcare have lagged. Those are the defensive issues. We'll see when we do the prices in May for each of the portfolios as we started this correction. These defensive names have started to outperform, actually. Go to page 24. And this is the Delaware portfolio, concentrated portfolio of 29 stocks. You see the growth rate much higher than the benchmark, Russell 1000 growth, 18.7 versus 11.3. And below their quarterly attribution, they did add 147 basis points in stock selection. Technology was the major contributor. However, their allocation cost them 110 basis points, and their underweight in energy hurt them. Underweight in energy will help them this second quarter, as we've seen energy stocks in April begin to sell off ahead of the spot price of oil. And now we've seen oil come down a bit from its highs in May. Overall, it was they've added a little bit of value. I'm going to go to page 30, which is Dodge and Cox equity, a much more diversified portfolio of 81 stocks. Their quarter on page 31 was in line with the benchmark, down 22 basis points in total. And you see the top 10 holdings, a couple financial stocks, Wells Fargo, Capital One, and a couple energy stocks, Schlumberger and Occidental Petroleum. Let's go to page 32 and 33, actually, Legato. Fund of funds, they underperformed by 40 basis points in the quarter. They've made changes to their lineup and some rebalancing themselves within their funds. April and was slightly better for them. And on page 34, you can see their quarterly added 57 basis points on an attribution basis. And Cap Prospects is next on page 36. 369 stocks, the benefit of the fund of funds, or having six underlying managers. Page 37, they added 125 basis points for the quarter, roughly two-fifths allocation, three-fifths stock selection, and the underweight in financials overall added 43 basis points for the quarter for Capital Prospects. Page 39 are the two international equity managers. And as I said, they've added combined the international equity composite, which is made up of LSV and Pyramus value and growth styles, added 110 basis points fiscal year to date, 9 months, 230 for the 1 year, and 380 for 2 years. Very strong performance and good rankings throughout the five-year period. Page 50 is Dodge and Cox and Pinto on the fixed income. We can see the good returns from Dodge and Cox now across all time periods. It took them a couple years to right the ship. And then PIMCO has been additive since they were hired almost a year ago now. It's been almost a year. And combined, the fixed income composite's done quite well for us. Page 51. You can see the currency returns on the top right chart in blue. The dollar has been weak. Again, with May being a reversal month for equities, the dollar is also reversed and starting to become a stronger currency against the pound, yen, and the euro. And on the bottom right is the interest rate term structure. And you can see short-term rates are roughly at zero still, zero to 25 basis points. And although the Fed is ending QE2, it can still be in an ease mode by controlling short-term rates at 0%. And the massive amount of bonds that they bought in the system through QE2 and QE1, they can hold on to those. They don't have to go to the market and sell those. And I suspect between now and the end of the year, short-term rates will continue to be at very, very low levels, and the Fed won't be flooding the market with the treasuries that they've been purchasing in QE2. So they can remain fairly, they can prolong the easing period, and we shall see what happens in the fixed income markets. Pages 52 and 53. Look at Dodge and Cox fixed income portfolio. The all-familiar overweight in corporates, underweight in treasuries on the sector basis. The duration on page 53 of 4.6 versus 5 for the aggregate is much closer to the aggregate than it's been. And the yield to maturity has a yield advantage of about 50 basis points, 3.5 versus 3%. Page 54 is PIMCO. They do show the end of March 31.5% in Treasury, although many of you have heard Mr. Gross speak that he does not want to own any Treasuries at this point in time. So I suspect from the end of March, the Treasury figure has come down dramatically. Their duration was above the benchmark, 5.7 versus 5.0, and they have a yield of maturity of about 30 basis points. So the quarterly report, all in all, was an excellent quarter, an excellent 9 months. Managers are all performing. If there are no questions, I'll just go straight to the manager review list for the end of March quarter, where we look at the individual managers. We've updated this, obviously, from the quarter before. All the managers are in good standing, and we have no recommended changes to that. Dodge and Cox. For 5 years, it's still 20 basis points below. Their three-year number did improve from minus 30 bips to plus 120 one quarter ago, so it's a dramatic improvement. Delaware was minus 100 for 3 years with a ranking of 60. We still deem them to be an excellent manager and would not take them off the good standing list. And we'll show they had a very good April. And Invesco has pulled almost even with their benchmark over the 3 years with a good ranking. So we're recommending no action on the manager review list, keeping everyone in good standing.
Are there any questions?
One quick question. What was the fund high before the slide started?
It was about $1.5 billion. Okay. We're just about there. Okay. Just about back where we were.
Monthly performance for April. First page, the index returns, page A, I'm looking at, after the verbiage. It was another good month in April. Russell 3000 up 3%. 1 year, 18.3. Growth continued to beat value for the month and for the longer periods of 1 and 3 years. You see the Russell 3000 for 10 years up 3.6%, starting to creep up. Remember, about a year ago, we showed you that right around 0%. So this strong rally has lifted up the 10-year average. Non-U.S. stocks performed well in April, better than the U.S., with the ACWI ex-U.S. up 5%. And even bonds were up for the month of April. The aggregate is up 1.3% as data on economic activity appear to be seeing a slight slowdown from what was previously in the market, and yields have rallied. Page one, that 1.408 billion was up to 1.448 billion, gained about 40 million for the month of April. You see the fixed income at 32% below the range of 33.4 to 40.8. The rebalancing will add about 3.5% to fixed income. And again, market action will add a little bit less than that to that to get us back towards the back within the range. And then page two, the fund, as I said, improved by 40 million from the prior month, the end of March. And 193 million above the levels from the prior year. So it's been quite a strong period for us. Page three, the market values of the individual managers versus target. And you can see, obviously, the U.S. equity managers starting to creep above their targets, although within range. And same with the internationals. The international portfolios are around 155 million at the end of April. And I remember at the low point, they got to around 80, 75 million, I believe. So they've roughly doubled from the low point. And then Invesco, you can see right bumping up on the 20 million mark, finally getting back to their initial level of funding. Page four, cash levels, including within the managers, are very low on the equity side. So there's been minimal drag during this strong period of performance. And page five, the performance for the
manager. Hey, Paul, excuse me. Why do we keep carrying the securities and we lost the 2.6?
Excuse me?
Why do we keep carrying the 2.6 million?
Well, it's a liability on our. We should
I
carry
mean, we can still owe it? Or
it's owed, yeah.
It is owed.
It's owed. And we'll get into it. We have a memo on securities lending updated, but okay. It's on our books, so. Page five, the monthly performance. Dodge & Cox had a very strong April, up 1%. Delaware was up 80 basis points. And the two small cap managers outperformed by about 0.5%. Good to see Legato outperforming for the month. For the 10-month period of fiscal year to date, you see very large returns and you see good alphas. Dodge & Cox up 233 bips. Delaware up 86, Capital Prospects up 337. Legato has been the one underperforming manager, although it appears the changes they have made, at least immediately, have had a beneficial effect. and the total domestic equity for the month of April of 3.4 versus 3.0, and fiscal year to date, the 10 months up 38% versus 36.3. Fixed income, relatively flat month for both managers, but the 10-month period, Dodge and Cox up 5.4 versus 2.6, and PIMCO up 3.6. Overall fixed income was up 1.25% for April, and for the 10 months up 5% versus 2.6. And lastly, well, not lastly, but the international equity managers were both relatively in line with the benchmark for the month of April. And then for the 10 months, they're both up about 85 and 94 bips LSV and Pyramus respectively. So combined 36.8 versus 35.9, or 90 basis points of alpha. Invesco had a good month of April also. Good to see them along with Legato putting in a good month, up 80 bips. And then fiscal year to date, now that they're down 1%, 34.8 versus 35.8. So combined, the total fund was up 3.04% versus 2.75. Alpha 30 basis points. It's been fairly consistent that month after month we're adding a little bit of value on a monthly basis. And you see when you combine them for 9 months and now 10 months, 25.3 versus 23.6 for the total fund, 174 basis points of alpha, and coming from all three of the major asset classes, which is very nice. It, you know, doesn't get much better than this, so hopefully you're as pleased as I am with that type of return. And then on the rolling 3 months, 3 years alphas, Dodge and Cox page 6 is trending up. Page 7, Delaware had a good month of April and brought it back towards 0% for 3 years. LSV, 150 bips over for 3 years. Pyramus even. And Dodge and Cox, page 10, you see between 2.5% and 3% alpha for 3 years. That's phenomenal. And Invesco, limited data, but they even pulled up a bit for the month of April. So, you know, very good report for April. I expect May to be a down month, and we'll see how the managers on the active side perform in that environment.
Top 10 holdings? Paul?
Thank you. Top 10 holdings. As I alluded to earlier,
this is item 6H.
Should be right here. May's been a much more challenging month. Excuse me. These are prices as of May 16th. And the first one is the BlackRock Russell 1000 Growth Index. And you can see, we've been talking about this for a couple months now, that the oils in general have been fairly weak. ExxonMobil down 6.36%. Nothing really outstanding other than that, but I would point out, we alluded to the defensive stocks, which have been lagging so long and started outperform in May. And you see in BlackRock, the Russell 1000 growth, J&J up 3.4%, Walmart up 4.4%, Procter & Gamble up 5.6%, PepsiCo up 5.1% on a relative basis. So these are showing you these defensive type of names have started to outperform in the month of May. The next one is the BlackRock Russell 1000 Value. Everything kind of within 5% on the upside or downside on the top 10. Chevron, another oil company, down 4.7 on a relative basis. And again, defensive names, AT&T, Procter & Gamble, Pfizer, J&J, all outperforming. As you notice, there's some names on both the Russell 1000 Growth and Russell 1000 Value, because Russell will sometimes split names between the two indexes. So you see J&J and Procter & Gamble on both. Capital Prospects, Gulfport Energy down 17.5. Small cap energy. It's not atypical from what we're seeing. And right below it, they had a stock up 19.9, so they kind of cancel each other out there. Delaware, large cap growth concentrated. Nothing on the downside more than 5.5% price line. EOG is another energy company down 5%. And then Visa 5, Medco and Allergan, two healthcare names, up 11 and 5. Again, the healthcare defensive names are outperforming. Dodge and Cox equity, oil's hurting them. Occidental and Schlumberger down 9 and 6. And they're very heavy in big pharmaceuticals, Dodge and Cox. And Merck and Pfizer up 6 and 2.5, outperforming again. Common theme there. Legato on the next page. Nothing really, everything within 5% on the upside downside in the top 10. BNY S&P 500, the next page, the index, ExxonMobil, and Chevron, we talked about from the Russell indices there. And then LSV, the two international equity managers, AstraZeneca, another pharmaceutical, global pharmaceutical, up 8.6. Another stock of 18%, Repsol, in their top 10, so that's good to see. And lastly, Pyramus, Royal Dutch, another energy, down 4.2, BP down 3.7%. Looks like they have some, the bottom of the top 10, a few names getting hit a little bit also. But, you know, nothing unusual. The energies continue to get hit a bit, and the defensive names have started to outperform on a short-term basis, at least.
Okay. Any questions for Paul?
Okay, security lending. We want to keep the board informed, obviously, on the security lending program at BNY. And staff, Tom, Hank, and the two Kathys, and myself had a call with BNY at the end of April, and also Bob Thompson, who's joined us on previous calls, the fixed income manager for Dodge & Cox, was on the part of the call also. And the memo is here. There's nothing earth-shaking or real changes from our previous report. The Lehman, we have a piece on the Lehman because of there's a couple of different liquidation plans being sponsored, and the one that appears to be the more favorable is the Pulse and CalPERS plan, which would get the Lehman bondholders, as of this moment, a little bit more cents on the dollar than the rival plan under Goldman Sachs. These bonds have rallied up towards the level of the Paulson plan, and it would not be unexpected for them to rise further. So we'll keep watching that. And lastly, we had the bulk of the call was on the asset-backed securities. I think there's a little spreadsheet with the six tranches. The good news is they continue to pay down on a month-to-month basis. I guess the bad news is that they kind of stopped going up in value these last couple months. They had, during this recovery period, rallied fairly significantly, but the last couple months they've kind of evened out. And you can see that they are expected to still pay down over time. These pools don't mature to 2036, 2037. The one change was that BNY Mellon said that they continue to look at each of these ABS pools on an individual basis, price basis, what they can fetch in the market. And if they deem that they're getting a decent price in the market, they will not hesitate and sell any one of these pools. If they do sell one of these pools, then the unrealized loss will turn into a realized loss, and we will be on notice to pay that. But in conferring with Bob Thompson, our recommendation would be just not to opt out of this at the moment, as they do continue to pay down on a monthly basis the six ABS pools. So that's information purposes.
Is this 4.6 million in addition to the 2 point something million that was on the the monthly report?
No, this is part of it. This is part. Remember that that 2 point is just a share of the. Sorry, Mike. This isn't in addition to it. Yes, that was just the Lehman piece that we had on the books.
I thought it was the Iceland piece.
We took that one off. That was our share. That 2.6 is our share of the Lehman piece. 70% of the Lehman. This would be in addition to that.
The Iceland Bank was in dark costs facing him. This is a good thing.
The estimate of this 4.6 million would be a loss of approximately 735,000 in 2036-2037. Any other questions on sec lending?
Item J, is this related to the Wall Street Journal article that was in yesterday's paper, Cole?
I didn't see it. It might be. There's been a lot of press on what's been going on with foreign exchange.
Yeah, they were like, they did 48 trades, all so that the pension fund came and had the worst possible payout. The bank that was doing this for the else, it was front page about it, by the Wall Street Journal yesterday. In fact, I meant to bring it to ask you about it.
There's a, this is just an update on what we asked LSV and Pyramus last month when they did their semi-annual presentations on their policies on trading FX when they have to, and as both said, they trade very little with our custodian, BNY Mellon. In some cases, on emerging markets, a few countries, they have no choice but to trade with them, but they do monitor, they being LSV and Pyramus, monitor BNY Mellon and make sure they're getting a fair price. I think what we've been reading about is that custodians have had a nice source of revenue from FX trading with their clients over the years. And often cases, it was a case where a trade would be done with the custodian, and obviously it trades within a range every day, and the custodian would just pick the most advantageous price to themselves. That's a lot of what you're reading about.
Yeah, there were like 48 straight. I'll send everyone the article.
Yeah, exactly.
It was in yesterday's journal.
That's not happening this fund because, A, our managers are keeping, are on top of our, a lot of that happens when a fund does internal trading themselves. They don't have out external managers.
So you've got this covered for us.
Yeah, I got this
covered. To notice those kind of patterns.
Yeah, and this is just information from BNY Mellon, our custodian. But I think what we're reading about, especially the real bad stuff we're reading about on FX trading, isn't happening here. And we'll continue to monitor that.
Okay.
That concludes item 6.
Okay. Any questions for Paul before you come with in? Tom?
Okay, administrative budget for fiscal year 2011-2012. You have a 4-page narrative, 1-page attachment showing the figures of the budget, and also a 2nd attachment showing the organizational chart for Sterensera. The request for 2011-2012 is for $2,228,676. That includes all administrative expenses, including costs related to computer technology. It's well under the legal limit. The legal limit is 21 basis points of the accrued actuarial liability. This budget represents about 13 basis points of the actuarial accrued liability as of June 30th, 2010. There's a large jump in salaries, and this is mostly due to the transitioning of staff, high-level management staff, into retirement with its contingent terminal pay cash-outs, about $125,000. Also $30,000 potentially for transition training cost as we bring on new managers and try to train them before the current managers leave, and about $6,000 for potential merit increases for staff. We do still include 5% deduction for all staff and follow the county policies related to personnel actions for other confidential and management staff. There's about an $82,000 increase in benefits, which is $27,000 for increased retirement costs, about $40,000 for potentially for new management staff who may have higher health insurance coverage, perhaps full family coverage versus the current employee-only coverage that exists. Also about a $4,000 increase in self-funded insurances, unemployment, workers' comp, and about $11,000 in FICA. The rest of the costs are pretty much in line with what the expenditures are this year. We maintain the retirement board and staff training costs at the current levels, regardless of what the past expenditures have been, because we potentially will, we know we will have two new retirement board members, a retiree representative and an alternate retiree representative. Could potentially have one or perhaps other retirement board member changes, which would increase the training cost. Plus, we will have three new managers in the next year, at least in staff-wise, so that will be additional training cost throughout the year. Otherwise, the budget is pretty much in line. We had both Kathy Johnson, the accountant, and Kathy Herman assist Hank Scow, who normally prepares the budget, and I reviewed it with these three other staff. And Kathy Herman is here today actually to answer any detailed questions. She's been over crunching the numbers this year, acknowledging that Hank will be gone in September, I'll be gone in November, and what happens next year. So she's on board this year running the whole budget process.
Any questions on the budget?
I had just had a couple quick questions.
Sure.
County Council, why are we still estimating we're going to pay them $10,000? Is that still for that?
There's one disability
that
case
Deidre
that's
is still
in the courts.
Working on.
It's still,
okay.
It's still in the courts and should be up for appeals and so on. And it, so it was a lot higher than what we had anticipated just because of that.
Yeah. And SBT, why do you think that's going to go down, that cost? Is that the cost they gave
those
you?
Those are the figures that were given
okay.
to us. Right. Any other comments, staff?
No, I think just staffing-wise, a lot of the departments are shrinking, and the costs are being passed along, and so you see it in some of the cap costs that they come through. So.
The contract services.
I'll just look, because I think ours went up a little bit this year. So.
That's right.
Don't talk too loud about that.
Any other questions on the budget? Any comments?
I can just answer the SBT question. We asked our technology department, SBT, to take the average reduction of your customers that were taken this year. And since the average of county departments was 18%, that's what they reduced your budget.
Okay. Do we need to approve this?
You may.
Can I have a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
So the move and second to approve the fiscal year 2011-12 budget. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
This is your last official budget.
This is this is it.
Craig, you said we don't need to have a
executive
session. So all we have left is members' forum, and we'll start with Supervisor DeMarchini.
I don't have anything today, Mr. Chairman.
I don't either.
I don't have anything.
Clarence?
Nothing.
Just one comment. I was sad to see that Debbie Hebert had passed away. She was a county employee for many, many years. Was a person in the local union, asked me for a number of years. Just a great, great person, and I'm very sad to see that she passed away. That's all I have.
Linda? Jeff?
Okay, just one thing. We've been looking at a different microphone setup, recording setup. We did purchase some suggested microphones. We've run some tests on them. If anybody wants to stay after the meeting and listen to the test, the quality is much worse than we currently have. So our plan at this point is to go ahead with Stanislaus AV, and it should take them about a month to get some more professional audio equipment in. So we may have it by the last meeting in June. Might be the first meeting in July, though. But we did give it a shot. But if anybody wants to listen to the test, we've got the comparisons here for you.
Feeling?
Nothing. Nothing else from me?
You guys have anything? Meeting is adjourned.